Hi, and thank you for joining us for In All Things, a weekly podcast of the Evangelical Presbyterian Church. I'm Rachel Joseph. Your host for In All Things is Dean Weaver, State Clerk of the EPC. We pray that God uses Dean and his guests to inform and inspire you about the EPC and how God is working in and through our global movement of Evangelical Presbyterian Churches. The motto of our family of congregations is, in essentials, unity, in non-essentials, liberty, in all things, charity. Now, here's Dean.
And thank you so much, Rachel Joseph, as always, for your words of introduction. And welcome back, my friends, to another edition of In All Things, a podcast of the Evangelical Presbyterian Church. Whether you're part of the EPC family or you're part of our extended family listening into these conversations in one of the 44 countries around the world that do on a regular basis, we're just grateful to have you join us. Today, our conversation is going to be a fun one with a dear friend. Case Thorpe is the theologian in residence at First Presbyterian Church in Orlando. And even though the Global Command Center for In All Things is also in Orlando, Case is so important that he was unable to come out to our office to record this.
Oh, so come on.
Doing this online. But Case is the was a moderator of the 39th General Assembly for the EPC and has really ventured out into some important work with both his blog posts, some work with a fellows group in Orlando, a thing called the Collaborative. He's got his fingers in a lot of different things, particularly around the area of faith and work, which is what we want to talk about today. And Case, it's just a delight to have you back. You are so highly esteemed that you're one of our very few repeating guests now in year three of In All Things.
Well, when I'm the three-peat, if you buy me lunch, I'll come out.
Well,
you buy me lunch, I'll be there.
When you get the three-peat, you get the jacket.
Like a green master's jacket?
It's similar. It's a Scottish plaid.
And you can only wear it at General Assembly. You can't.
Yes, and only on, I think, Wednesday nights.
Is that kilt night?
That could be kilt night. So we'll try to get one that matches your kilt.
Well, thank you, Dean. It's great to be
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. Well, my friends, today's edition of In All Things is brought to you by the 44th General Assembly, taking place this summer at Hope Church in Cordova, Tennessee. We're excited to invite you on June the 18th, 19th, and 20th to be a part of not only our 44th General Assembly, but will be our second Gospel Priority Summit. We're on Tuesday and Wednesday mornings and Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons. We will offer a plenary opportunity in each of the four areas of gospel priorities in the EPC, which is, of course, global movement, church planting, church health, and biblical leadership. And everybody will be in that wonderful sanctuary at Hope together to hear and engage with some important things to help us as we continue in our mission of the EPC, which is to carry out the Great Commission. And of course, those four gospel priorities are the ways in which we do that. The GA will also have some great preachers. We'll start off on Tuesday morning with Tim Johnson from Avenue Presbyterian Church in downtown Memphis. We will have from the World Outreach Committee on Tuesday evening, Marcos Ortega. That's just to give you a little taste for Tuesday. We'll end up the assembly with Rufus Smith from Hope Church preaching on Thursday night to really bring it all together. So there's going to be some great stuff going on, great worship, great equipping, lots of relational building and best practices. And you want to be there because hopefully Case Thorpe is going to be there, and he's always a big,
well,
don't tell me you're not going to be there. Just lie.
No, I was going to say, actually, this morning I registered.
Oh, good. There you go.
I got my plane ticket. I got my hotel. So, yeah. And I was thrilled to see Jim Davis as a plenary speaker.
Yes, he's a neighbor of yours, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, he's a son of First Pres Orlando, and doggone it, his Reformed Baptist leanings keep him from being back at First Pres Orlando. But he's a pastor here in Orlando, and we love
him. And the book that he just wrote, Cases.
Yeah. The Great De-Churching.
Yeah.
And he wrote it with his executive pastor at the time, Michael Graham, who now is the director of programming for the Keller Center at the Gospel Coalition.
Wow.
And they have hit it big, like a Christianity Today Book of the Year. They have been featured on NPR, New York Times. I mean, really
well. The data in that book that
reveals invaluable.
is never, we've never seen it before. It's the most detailed, data-driven analysis of the church over the last 40 years that we've ever seen. And the results of it are stunning.
Well, it was our EPC church in Missouri, The Crossing, that helped to sponsor it and have actually implemented some of their own ideas based on that data. And they've had progress.
Yeah. Yep. So we've got some good stuff going there. That's one of the reasons why I love talking to you, Case, because you're a connector. You're always in the know, and you talk with people, connect with people. You know what's going on, and you know how to put people together with other people. And so thank you for that little additional promo for Jim. That would be great.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. So, Case, for those who don't know you, and it's hard to believe there's anybody who doesn't, but if they don't know you, give us a little bit of your background and story so people could get to know you.
So I'm from the Atlanta area. Good old Georgia boy. And my Episcopalian father and Southern Baptist mother raised me in the Methodist church.
Oh my goodness.
Until we followed my youth director in sixth grade to Smyrna Presbyterian Church, east of Atlanta. And I had my call to ministry experience while in college, majored in religion, went on to seminary.
Where did you go to college, Case?
I went to Emory in Atlanta.
I was thinking you were a University of Georgia guy. I thought you were a Go Dawgs.
Well, I'm a Bulldog fan for sure. Grew up going. Okay. But after Emory, went to Princeton Seminary and thought I was on the academic path. And in some ways, that path has come back to visit me. But the gifts were just so clearly more in the church direction. And so I was a pastor at First Presbyterian Baton Rouge for 5 years and loved those 5 years. There I met Jody. Good. We married, had our first child, a little girl, who is now a freshman in college.
That's stunning, isn't it?
Came here to First Orlando about 19 years ago as the mission pastor, then mission evangelism, senior associate pastor, and now theologian in residence.
Wow.
As my mother says, that's an awfully pompous title.
Well, you say it with such theological rigor.
Theologian. Yeah. I tell people I'm really the chief nerd.
Well, that's not these days. Nerd is in. That's
well, you know, we're Presbyterians, right?
Yeah.
Jody is a deacon. She is in philanthropic consulting and loves that. And we had two more boys. Charles is a senior at Boone High School, and he's headed off to FSU. And then our son Brooks is a 12-year-old in sixth grade.
Wow. And you've got chickens. Yeah.
Oh, Dean, I'm not a fan, but I love my wife. I love my wife. We have 9 chickens. We have 3 schnauzers, 2 parakeets, 3 children. We had 2 goldfish that just died. And I always tell house sitters that if upon my return, the parakeets are dead and I'm not implicated, I will take you for dinner at Hillstone and purchase wine. So I extend that same offer to any of your listeners.
Listening to this someday. You never know.
Hey, come on.
All right.
Come on.
Well, Case, you've had such an incredible ministry life, and you just gave us such a quick summary of it, but your time at First Orlando, you've just been able to do almost everything under the sun, and now you land yourself in this season, which is really sweet, as a theologian in residence. Could you help our listeners understand what that means? It sounds impressive, but tell us down to earth, what does a theologian in residence at First Orlando actually do?
Well, it is kind of related to a part of the story I skipped, which was a doctorate at Fuller in missional ecclesiology. But because of my love of the educational journey, and teaching is really my strongest gift, we got to the point where I wanted to keep growing professionally. And, you know, I think up until the age of 40, I had to be a senior pastor. But since the age of 40, I want to do most of what I do best. And we love Orlando. Now we're praying that our kids will come back. And so I was thinking and praying actually through a sabbatical in my 40th year, what the next phase and season looks like. So that was a parallel track of how can I keep growing professionally. Then the collaborative, as you've mentioned, it was focused on faith and work as we grew it through First Pres as a ministry of the church, modeled it after Tim Keller's Redeemer's Center for Faith and Work. And it had limited impact, and we wanted it to grow as well. And, you know, a church system can only handle so much. And there were so many more needs for Collaborative to continue to reach wider audiences. So it was actually at the GA at Ward year before last that David and I slipped away for lunch, and I floated an idea. I said, okay, what would it look like if maybe I cut back to 3/4 time and we launched the Collaborative as a nonprofit and could see me continue to grow professionally and this grow as well? So and that's what I love about David. He's never told me no. He's always been encouraging and entrepreneurial.
Yeah, he's a great entrepreneurial leader and has supervision.
For sure.
So take us a little deeper dive into the Collaborative. So for folks who aren't familiar with the kind of, I think, point of the spear kingdom work of faith and work, could you take us there and what that looks like?
Yeah. So I cut back to 3/4 time at First Pres as theologian in residence, still a pastor, still a member of Presbytery. But this gave me space and room to grow and expand the Collaborative. So with this new model, we've widened the lens a bit more to cultural renewal in the public square. So our byline is, and here's my little fun little advertisement, we create discipleship resources and experiences for Christ-centered professionals. But one of those key components, yes, is faith and work. It is this conviction that to be missionally effective in our society, we have to help people integrate their larger calling in life, their particular calling for which they get paid. And it's more than just their witness at work. Yes, ethics and evangelism matter. That was the focus of Marketplace Ministries, 80s, 90s, and still today. And I call that Marketplace 1.0. But this approach is sort of a Marketplace 2.0 to look at society as a whole, to look at it institutionally and think about those institutional leaders and to what degree are they integrating their faith and work and seeing it filter out in and through their institutions. And it's been a great run. I know that, goodness, today we can point to a number of the leaders in Orlando, bank presidents, industry leaders, people in office who love Jesus and have an influence. But did anybody here 35 years ago sit and go, we want to make sure we have a Christian in these places and seats? And I know that we can't control or predict that, but I also know if we aren't focused on our one percenters, those who will be leading institutions and departments and such, then we're going to lose the witness in society.
Right. And so that's business. It's the arts. It's community. It's really looking at, I mean, the sweet spot of this podcast based on Colossians 1 is all things are by him, for him, and through him. And so you're looking at that very comprehensive, it's a kind of a Dutch Reformed worldview.
Kuyperian worldview.
That's exactly right. And so you're looking at the Lordship of Christ, sovereign over all things, and helping people connect how their faith impacts their work. And, you know, you probably read Kenneman's book, Faith for Exiles. And when they did this study, the first study Barna did years ago was why all the millennials left the church. And then they did a study about those who stuck with the church and what caused them to stick. And there were five variables that they came up with. And the fifth one was this integration of faith and work. They wanted whole life discipleship. So First Orlando also has kind of a fellows group. And so I'm thinking the Collaborative and the fellows have some potential synergy there because that generation wants to connect the dots, right?
Well, so I started the three fellowships as an expression of the Collaborative. So my conviction has shifted over the years that rather than go a mile wide and an inch deep, I want to dig deeper wells and dig fewer of them. So yeah, I teach Sunday school, have a whole lot of folks, and we do a great thing. But we pioneered this fellowship model. So what's a fellowship? It's not a Sunday school. It's not small group. It is something that's hard, high bar. It's costly. Not only financially, but time and engagement. It is community-based. It's over time, and it's as much heart work as it is head work. So the first was the Gotham Fellowship, and we licensed this right out of Redeemer. It is for Christ-centered professionals, 25 to 75. We meet every Wednesday morning for 2 hours from September to May, read 75 to 100 pages. They pay $1,600. There's a retreat, different field trips. And it's all about developing a theology of cultural renewal in and through your work. Well, now I've got, I'll have 85 Gotham Fellows in Orlando coming up soon.
Wow.
Well, then comes along the Fellows Initiative, TFIs, that some people may be familiar with. And that's sort of a loose umbrella Confederate kind of organization where the local chapters, there's about 27 local chapters are where the activity is. And so it was in a pool on a mission trip in the Dominican Republic. I heard about this and thought, let's do it. So we created the Orlando Fellows. And this is for recent college grads. They live with us for 9 months in a church member's home. We help them find a job, often with a church member's business, for which they get paid Monday to Wednesday. They pay $6,000 to be engaged. Our foundation provides the other $6,000 because it's about 12 per student on programming. Then on Thursdays is discipleship day, guys and gals in different groups in the morning, a lunchtime speaker, leader in the community. And then I get them Thursday afternoon for two Reformed seminary courses, one Faith and Work, and the other is the Biblical Narrative. And so we're filming this on a Thursday, and my favorite hours of the week are Thursday afternoons.
Really?
They do a couple of conferences, trips, a silent retreat at a monastery, and then a mission trip. And then finally, the third fellowship we've recently created, this is more new. We've probably got about 60 Orlando Fellows, and 70% stay in your church.
Right. That's one of the secret ingredients of that whole thing.
It is a golden bullet. If you are looking for a golden bullet in your congregation, no matter your size, you don't have to be big. It is certainly this program. And we probably have 100 members a year that touch that program in some way.
Yeah.
As a host home, a job giver, a speaker, etc. Finally, the Arts Fellowship Orlando, 6-month experience. You get discipled in arts and faith integration. You get a $5,000 grant to do a original project. Can be a painting, a sculpture, an opera piece. We've had musical theater. And then in June, we rent the big theater downtown, have 300 people come, and they present. So I really believe the fellowship model is a great one for our future as a church.
So I'd love to dig down deeper on that at some point, Case, because I think in the EPC, we started in the right direction a couple of years ago when we really doubled down on evangelism. But discipleship is much more than that. I mean, Jesus said to go into all the world and make disciples, not just converts. And the whole life approach, the faith and work approach, the all of life redeemed approach that you are talking about seems like the kind of approach to discipleship the EPC should be looking at as a whole. Would you disagree with that?
No, I would agree because, well, that's kind of our sweet spot. We're the nerds of Christianity, but also evangelism comes from incredible discipleship. And I believe our evangelism has dropped off as Presbyterians the past 50, 75 years because our discipleship has waned and been paltry.
Yep.
So I could tell you numerous stories of how these Gotham Fellows in the workplace, Orlando Fellows, wherever they go on in life, and then the Arts Fellows have jump-started a Christian witness in the arts community. I went to a gathering of our Arts Fellows the other night that was open to all other Christian artists. Dean, I did not know 80% of the people there.
Ugh.
And that's a good thing. Usually, you know, pastors, we go to church events and we kind of know the crowd, but I loved that I didn't know most of the people there.
My vision talk that I gave at General Assembly last year referenced this book, a case, Damien Gerke's In the Way, the church, okay, as we know, it could be a discipleship movement again. And the chapter I was just reading again last night was that we kind of have it backwards and that we start with evangelism and hope they become disciples. Yeah. As opposed to a more biblical model where Jesus says, come and follow me, and his way of life and his teaching they follow, and then they invite others to follow. And evangelism flows more out of discipleship. If evangelism flows out of discipleship, the person who comes to faith is more likely to be a disciple than if the discipleship is somehow supposed to follow downstream from the evangelism, which frequently never happens.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly concur. And small groups and Sunday schools just aren't going to cut it anymore.
Yeah. I'm convinced, not to throw out the classroom, because I think there's a place for both. But when you go in the New Testament, you look at the majority of Jesus' teaching. Yes, there's some in the synagogue, but the vast majority of it, Paul sometimes in the synagogue, but the vast majority of it is for Jesus, it's on the road. It's on the way. It's in somebody's living room. It's on a hillside. Paul is doing it as he's traveling all the time. It feels like we need a little corrective from our kind of Western scholastic approach. It's purely classroom. And one of the things I love about your fellows is you've got classroom. That's super important.
Yeah, for sure.
But then you have the life experience where they can see how those things integrate and actually impact one another.
That's right.
That's awesome. All right, I want to shift gears a little bit if we could, because you've been putting out a blog biweekly now called Porch Life, which I have enjoyed and have been reading some regularity. And at the end of this, I want you to give people information on how they could sign up for that.
Yeah. And I would say newsletter more particularly, because it comes to you and it's not as deep as a blog.
Okay. All right. Well, I thought this last issue that you sent out had some great stuff. The conversation you had with Dave Strunk around the area of kind of the political conversations. Yeah. And I'm particularly interested in that because we're entering it, as you know, into this highly charged political season.
And here we go again.
I love the fact that whether it's the arts or the fellows or the Gotham group, you've got people who are thinking about not only integrating faith and work, but they're learning how to speak to one another and to their colleagues and to their neighbors in ways that are engaging with culture in a transformative way rather than a confrontational way. And it feels like all the conversations out there right now are confrontational. They're polemical. Yeah. People are talking past each other. Nobody is listening. Talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on engaging in dialogue coming into this season of election.
Yeah. Well, Porch Life has really been a great outlet for me to think more deeply about these things and to help it be a help to others. And this particular issue was guided by actually a conversation I had just a few weeks back with Russell Moore. I interviewed him on the collaborative podcast called Nuance, and he is formerly with the Southern Baptist Convention. He was the head of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. And when he came out against Trump in 16, they ran him off. And he's now the executive editor of Christianity Today. Well, he said to me, he said, Case, in 2020, we had the pandemic, George Floyd. We had the Antifa folks secure or take over downtown parts of downtown Seattle. The protesters in D.C. that sent the president to the bunker. Then we had such a contentious election that was held in limbo. And then the assault on the Capitol January 6th. And he said, are we ready for 2024? And let me tell you, a rock dropped in my stomach.
Yeah.
And just yesterday on NPR, there was a report about the percentage of Republicans or Democrats who are willing to cheat to win, understanding that violence will have to happen in order to win. And these were large, large percentages.
Wow.
So the whole Nuance podcast name comes from the fact that I was so disappointed with how some of my very friends, Christians at my own church, were reacting to the times. And I felt like you just don't see the nuance. Now, that doesn't mean to be a yellow belly fence sitter, but to, I think, follow as Christ would with wisdom and discernment, as I mentioned in that Porch Life newsletter, not let the media just completely give you your talking points, not let the media just dominate the agenda setting. And I think that we could all double down, learn something from these times, and really consider what sort of witness we're bearing. I've got someone who every time I see her gives me the Fox News talking points. And you know, we're more than that. And even if they're the CNN talking points, left or right, we got to elevate things.
Yeah. So in their recent edition, you give, I think it's 5-6 different ways to do that. Anticipate, transcend, be prudent. That's the one I want to ask you about. Reframe and outflank. That's a good one. Localize and be joyful. So talk to us a little bit about what you mean to be prudent when it comes to these kind of conversations.
And I really want folks to know, I mean, Dave Strunk, who's at Church of the Redeemer in Maryville outside of Knoxville, like he was a very leading co-author.
Yeah.
When we first wrote this in 2020.
Well, and we just did a seminar, a webinar with Zach Eswine, one of our EPC pastors in the St. Louis area, on civil discourse in the political arena as well.
Yeah.
So, and I think pastors are looking for help because they're navigating this space, because in their congregations, they have people who are listening to MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, you name it, and they're getting hit from all sides.
Well, and Twitter and everybody else.
Right.
So Prudence, think how it, who on this podcast has named their daughter Prudence lately? I doubt very many at all. It's not a popular name. But oh my goodness, it is such a great word. Tanner Fox, my colleague here at First Pres Orlando, loves to read Calvin's Golden Booklet once a year. And we have it in the Gotham curriculum, so I actually get to read it once a year. And it's great. It's not long. It's actually excerpts from other writings of his. I would highly encourage you. And in it, he talks again and again and again about prudence.
Yeah.
And what is prudence? It's pausing before you speak. It's using wisdom, not black and white, right and wrong. It's trying to speak contextually and to bring God's truth to a particular exact need. And I think we need to start naming our girls this again because we need more of it reminding us and all around us.
Well, and your, one of your points in the edition that you just put out at Porch Life is that it actually is rooted in practical decision-making in everyday life. And just even in making decisions, pause, think about the implications of your decision, right?
Well, and I would encourage our pastors to not just speak philosophically or theoretically about church and state, political discourse, those sorts of things, which we do well because we're the nerds, right? But in your sermons, get very practical.
Yeah.
Because people want the hook to hang their hat on and to know, okay, how should I speak or react?
Right.
What do I do with that crazy uncle at Thanksgiving that just drops the bomb politically?
Right. Well, we're all going to be there, and it's well worth it looking through this newsletter. I think prudence would be a great thing, a great virtue for us to consider and dwell on. Mm. So thanks for raising that. And if people wanted to learn more about, particularly if they wanted to access A Porch Life and they wanted to get that in their inbox every other week, how would they reach out and get that?
So go to casethorpe.com. Casethorpe.com. There's no E on
site.
Thorpe.
You have a casethorpe.com.
Wow. And I've got a fancy podcast microphone. Like, I am an official Christian.
Wow. Like, someday when I grow up, I want to be like you, Case.
You can register or sign up for the newsletter at casethorpe.com. And then collaborativeorlando.com is where there's all kinds of resources there. The Nuance podcast is something folks will find in their podcast platforms. And if you go to collaborativeorlando.com, we've got a 31-day faith and work prompt journal.
Yeah.
It's a great little booklet, and we'll send it to you for free. And for 31 days, you work through the theology of faith and work and do some introspection.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Well, man, I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to GA.
All right. We will see you there, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Dean.
Well, my friends, that wraps up another conversation, a fun conversation with our friend Case Thorpe, who's the theologian in residence at First Presbyterian Church of Orlando. We're so grateful for the time that he was able to spend with us today. And if you would be interested in any of that information, I encourage you to reach out to casethorpe.com and get all of that, especially get Porch Life. It's an easy, quick read that comes into your inbox about every 2 weeks. And you will, like me, enjoy just spending some time going through there and starting your day thinking about the stuff that actually matters. And I'm going to spend the rest of my day thinking about how to be more prudent. So, today, as a reminder, as we go, my friends, as you think about whether it's the collaborative, whether you think about the faith and work integration, where you think about your own discipleship, remember these words from the scripture. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. And for by him, all things were created. That's the arts. That's economic systems, matters of justice, relationships, the church. And we should have another conversation, Case, about your thinking on institutions. I found fascinating the other day, your importance and the role of institutions. So maybe that's our Maybe when you come back for your jacket and the third time, we'll talk
about it. Let's do it.
For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things, my friends, were created through him, and they're for him. Because you see, he is before all things. And in him, ta pontos, all things hold together. For he is the head of the body, the church. Until the next time when we gather and continue the conversations, my friends, in this venue, I bid grace and peace to you.
Thank you again for joining us. On behalf of the entire team, please join us for our next episode. For more information about the EPC, including a directory of local churches, online resources, and much more, visit our website at www.epc.org. I'm Rachel Joseph. I pray you have an overwhelming sense of God's presence in all things today.